Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, featuring broadcasts from radio's golden years. Mark Livonier, your host for this hour of horror. Two original authors penning all of the broadcasts of these next two series. Later on, it's Kevin B. 13, but right now, Scott Bishop's story, The Curse of the Neanderthal, on Dark Fantasy. This NBC episode first aired on January 2nd, 1942.
I am the Neanderthal man.
Operator? Are you there, operator?
She's probably gone out for a spot of tea.
Or a date with one of the music hall boys.
You people be quiet.
Isn't she pretty when she's excited, Hayes?
Oh, quiet, quiet.
Operator. Operator.
Why would anyone be so anxious to call one's sister anyway?
I can't for the life of me imagine.
Will you two please go take a walk or something? Operator, are you there?
You could write your sister a letter, you know, instead of trying to call her long distance.
I'd probably get in touch with her sooner. Are you there, operator? Oh, I had her on the line just a moment ago.
Now, if it were her young man she were calling, I'd know why she's so very anxious.
I say, old man, it so happens I am the lady's young man.
Oh.
Well, I have nothing to do with either of you if you don't stop teasing me.
My dear girl, do you really want to get that call through to your sister?
Oh, no, I'm just standing here jiggling this receiver for the exercise. Ajax says it's good for the arm muscles. Operator, will you please answer?
Here, old girl. Let me have a try.
Reggie, go away. Don't bother me.
Permit me, milady, to assist you.
No, Reggie.
One side now, one side.
Reggie, this call's important.
Just why I'm so anxious to help you. Now, look here, operator. We've been trying... Eh? What's that? Oh, operator. Yes, into a telephone transmitter, but if... I say now, look here, my girl, if you want...
Give me that receiver.
Oh, but Mandy...
Are you there, operator? Yes, I wish to place a call. We were disconnected. This is Amanda Loveland. Yes, at Lookout Point. That's right, the artist colony. I wish to speak to Miss Grace Loveland, number 12, Garrett Street, London. Yes, that's right. How soon can you get through to London, please? Very well. Will you call me back? Thank you.
There, you see? The damsels always come running when a gentleman calls.
Oh, Reggie, save your humor for some other time, will you?
I say, something wrong, old girl?
I don't know.
Why do you use that tone, darling?
Well, look here, Amanda. Nothing wrong with your sister, is there?
No, it's not that.
But something's wrong. I can tell by the way you've been acting.
Yes, you were certainly never in such a hurry to call Grace before.
I'm anxious to know where she was today.
Where she was?
Yes. She was supposed to be attending a tea party in London, but... Well, I've reason to think she wasn't there.
Well, so suppose she wasn't. Why should that upset you?
Perhaps if I tell you, you'll understand.
Yes. Something's wrong. I certainly want to know about it.
Yes, Amanda, by all means, tell us what's troubling you.
Yes. Yes, I must tell somebody. Reggie, will you please close the door?
Why, certainly, darling. Now, Amanda, sit here.
No, I'd rather not sit down.
Say, you are upset.
Yes. I had the strangest experience this afternoon.
You did?
Where?
In Nanor Canyon.
So that's where you were today.
No wonder we couldn't find you. Reg and I wanted you to go up to the falls with us.
I went into the canyon to paint.
Well, we gathered you were off somewhere working. I noticed your equipment wasn't around any place.
You've been there, haven't you, in the canyon?
Oh, not I. I've been planning to go there, though.
Oh, I've been a couple of times.
Why didn't you tell me you were going into Nanor? I've gone along.
There's only one way into the canyon from this end, you know.
Yes, near Flagstone Point. It's 12 miles to the other end.
Well, I arrived at Flagstone Point about noon, So I climbed down the path and picked out a shady spot in the canyon to eat the lunch I'd taken along.
Yes?
After that, I looked around a while and then picked out a scene near the entrance to the canyon.
To paint?
Of course, to paint Hayes.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, dear.
It was a perfect scene. The light was just right, so I spent most of the afternoon there until the light began to fade.
Did you finish the sketching?
Yes. Filled in a great deal of the color. It was really going to be quite good.
What do you mean, going to be?
I'll never finish it.
Why, dear?
Because I never want to go back there again.
Well, what on earth happened?
Oh, why doesn't that operator get that call through to London?
Amanda, tell us what happened in the canyon.
Yes, for heaven's sake, this suspense.
What happened was like a nightmare.
Darling.
Yes, like a nightmare. Just as I was getting ready to pack up my things, I heard a noise behind me. A low, rumbling noise. And when I looked around, I saw that a side of the canyon was caving in.
My word, landslide?
Yes. The whole side of the canyon was falling away, making a terrific noise about it. Left a sheer vertical cliff there, where it had been sloping before.
Yes?
Right where the only path down into the canyon had been.
You mean you were trapped there in the canyon?
I certainly was. With night coming on. And you know the stories they tell around here about Nanor Canyon.
Yes, they say the place is simply oozing with ghosts at night.
Oh,
no, really, Reggie. The place does have a reputation.
Oh, I've heard the stories, but you don't want to believe everything you hear, you know.
Well, how on earth did you get out of the canyon, Amanda?
I had a beastly time of it.
Did you get out before dark?
I certainly did not. As soon as I saw that the path was cut off from the land side, I started walking along the side of the canyon, trying to find a way out.
But there are no others.
Didn't I find that out? I walked and walked, and all the time it was growing darker and darker, and finally the sun went down, and a ghostly gloom settled over the canyon. I began to walk faster, but I couldn't find any place that looked like a way out. I've walked for miles. No way out of here. Oh, dear, it's so dark. All I can do is keep walking. Oh! Oh, what's that? Oh, some night bird. Yes, that's all. Such a weird sound. I've never heard anything like it before. Kevin, it's gone. That's strange. That bird was the only noise I've heard in this place. No other night noises at all. Good heavens. What's that up there? Light. Shining on a human figure. Am I losing my mind? It's Grace there in the light. Oh, no. Oh, no, it can't be. Grace! That is Grace, standing there in that strange glow of light. Pointing. Gesturing as though trying to show me a path out of here. Yes. Yes, she is directing me out of the canyon. The light. I can see the way out. Grace, is that you? Is that you, Grace? The light's fading away. She's gone. There's still that strange light shining on the way out of this awful place.
There actually was a path leading up out of that canyon.
How else do you suppose I got back here?
Amazing.
That strange light continued to glow until I found the path and managed to climb up. When I looked back, it was pitch dark in the canyon again.
Amanda,
Are you certain you didn't dream all of that?
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Reg.
No, I don't think it was a dream.
Well, what makes you say that?
Oh, well, it must be London. Are you there? Yes? Yes, this is Amanda Loveland. Yes, ready for my call to London, thank you. Are you there, Grace? Oh, darling, this is Amanda. Oh, fine, thank you. Darling, have you been in London all day? Oh. Oh, no, nothing's wrong. Oh, no. Don't worry, dear. Everything's all right. Yes. I may be coming to London soon. All right, darling. Take care of yourself. Goodbye, dear. Grace has been in London all day.
Surely.
There in the canyon in that strange light, I saw her as plainly as I see you now. But the voice wasn't hers.
Then how are we going to account for what happened?
There is only one way to account for it.
You mean... Hey, you think you know what happened to me?
I think so. You were guided out of that canyon by a swarf.
A swarf?
A swarf. It's a name commonly applied to a supernatural spirit with the power of impersonating some earthly being.
Impersonating, you say?
Yes, there's no explanation. Except that swarfs have often been seen in these parts. Now, this particular spirit took the earthly shape of your sister and helped you find a way out of your temporary prison.
No, I don't believe such things happen, Hayes.
Well, you'd certainly believe it if you'd experienced it like I did.
Yes, Reggie, you're wrong. Those things do happen. Swarfs do appear in this vicinity.
But that's weird.
Well, it certainly is. See one's sister appear in a place in the darkness and speak in a voice and then to learn she was actually hundreds of miles away at the time.
Amanda, is this the landscape you were doing?
Oh, yes.
Mind if I have removed the cover and have a look?
Oh, no, go right ahead. Just as I left off, I was packing up.
Here, Hayes. You better let me give you a hand. If you spoil one of Amanda's paints, she'll... I say, look,
Amanda. Have you seen this since you left the canyon?
No. No, I told you I haven't.
Look at it. There in the right-hand corner.
A strange, monstrous-looking creature. Lurking in the shadows.
Amanda, were you conscious of the fact you were painting that fantastic creature into the picture?
No. No, I wasn't. I hadn't even noticed it.
That's very strange.
Yes. Isn't it?
If your perspective is correct, Amanda, that creature is about 8 feet tall.
A huge, fiendish thing.
But how did it ever become a part of my painting?
Yes. How?
Well, we'll find out.
What do you mean, Hayes?
We'll go down into the canyon and have a look.
No, no, not me.
Oh, I mean tomorrow, of course. When it's daylight.
How much farther, Amanda?
We're practically there.
What amazes me is that you couldn't find the way the swarf pointed out to you last night, Amanda.
I'm sorry, Hayes. It doesn't seem to be there today.
No, well, what's the difference? It didn't take us long to come in from the other end of the canyon on horseback.
Yes, the only thing that annoys me is that we couldn't ride the animals all the way.
Oh, well, the walking won't hurt you. Besides, we've only been afoot a few hundred yards.
Oh, here we are. This is the spot I was painting. I set up my canvas over there on that little mound.
Then, according to the sketch you made, that fearful creature was lurking about here.
Reggie, look here.
Bones. Human bones down there in that crevice.
Oh, I say, those can't be human bones.
No, they're much too large.
I should say so.
You're wrong, both of you. They are human bones. I've studied anatomy enough to recognize the clavicle. humerus and ulna of the human arm. And the femur and fibula of the leg there.
Jove, Hayes is right.
This was some gigantic prehistoric creature. Heaven knows how many years old.
Could this skeleton have any connection with the ghostly figure in my painting?
It could, yes. It's just possible that the spirit of this prehistoric man is himself a swarf.
And can take on a human shape. The spirit, I mean.
Precisely. He saw Amanda sitting there on that mound, painting. He assumed a shape she couldn't make out, but one which her professional brush caught in the sketching.
Then he could have assumed the form of my sister.
If our theory is correct, yes.
That's fantastic.
But how can we learn anything about this thing that was buried here in this crevice?
There's one way I know of. We can consult Dr. Gustav.
By Jove, you're right. Dr. Gustav's staying at the colony.
Well, then let's go get him and bring him here.
Yes, let's. Who knows? We may have discovered something entirely unknown to our civilization.
Suspicions were correct, my friends. These are human bones.
Can you identify them, Doctor?
I most certainly can. This was a Neanderthal man.
Neanderthal? Well, the Neanderthal man existed thousands of years ago.
True, Miss Loveland. From 20 to 40,000 years ago.
There's no mistake about it?
Not the slightest. These are the fossilized remains of an ancient man. Look. Look at these peculiarly shaped molar teeth. Now, that's one side. Every bone of his body shows some distinct markings. Many of them are of simian nature.
Ape-like, you mean?
Exactly. Eyebrow ridges were like those of the gorilla. Roof of the skull was low like theirs. And yet, his brain most probably surpassed the modern Europeans in size and ability.
How long ago did you say he existed?
The date of his culture may be put down tentatively as extending from 40,000 to 20,000 BC. The Neanderthal man appears to have been the sole occupant of Europe during the middle of the Pleistocene period, throughout the time in which the Mousterian culture prevailed. He buried his dead with great signs of respect. He worked flint implements with great skill. He was a fine hunter. Lived in caves and rock shelters.
But, Doctor, after all this time, his remains should be quite deep in the earth.
I know. And he undoubtedly has been buried deeply through the centuries. But some subterranean disturbance must have caused this crevice and exposed his burial place.
Look, did you men see this?
What, dear? A stone tablet.
There's some sort of strange pictures on it.
Let me see, please. Yes, sir. Just so.
What is it, Dr. Gustav?
This is the final proof. This is the picture writing of the Neanderthal man.
Can you decipher it?
I can, indeed. And now, let's see. This portion here, my left, that's indiscernible. But the rest of it reads, "Who moves my bones will surely die as I have died."
A curse. Well, then, let's take his advice and leave him alone.
Oh, not on your life, sir. Why, this is one of the most amazing finds of the century. These bones must be removed to the museum and reconstructed.
But the warning on the stone tablet.
Oh, nonsense. Miss Loveland, nonsense. Do you think a curse can continue to exist through 40,000 years? 400 centuries?
Oh, no. Well, Mandy, this is the museum. Ever been here before?
Once, when I was a child. Uncle Reginald brought me.
Hmm. How long has it been since the Neanderthal man was brought here?
Oh, at least 6 weeks.
Well, Dr. Gustav said in his letter that the man had been completely reconstructed. The skeleton had been placed in a standing position in a special room.
There's the room, see?
Oh, yes, the sign over the door. The Neanderthal man.
Let's go look before we visit the doctor, shall we?
Right.
Hmm. Hey, here we are. The door was open. But this room is empty.
Yes. But there's a stone base over there. They're saying might have been built up on it.
Hmm. That's strange.
I beg your pardon.
Yes, what is it?
I am called Banoff. Could you direct me to Dr. Gustav's study?
Oh, why, yes. It's at the end of the hall. See, his name is in black letters on that frosted door pane.
Oh, yes. I thank you so very much. Pardon me for having disturbed you.
Reggie.
Amanda, that man, Joe, what a giant. At least 8 feet tall.
The bushy eyebrows and low forehead. He looked like an ape.
And what was wrong with his neck? He held his head crooked over to one side. One shoulder humped up in a terribly grotesque position.
Did you see whether or not he went into the doctor's office?
No, I didn't.
Reggie, if I didn't know better, I'd think that man was...
Was what, dear?
Oh, nothing.
I know what you're thinking.
That warning, Reggie. Who moves my bones will die as I have died.
Amanda, look.
What?
There in the room, on the stone base, the skeleton of a prehistoric man.
But he wasn't there just a few moments ago.
Good Lord, come on, into the doctor's office.
Dr. Gustav!
Good heaven.
Oh, Reggie. What's happened to him?
He's dead. Broken neck.
He was sitting at his desk, writing.
Writing? A report on the Neanderthal man. Look. He just completed one sentence. It is my finding that the death of the Neanderthal man discovered in Manoth Canyon was caused by a broken neck.
The Neanderthal. Another original tale of dark fantasy, written by Scott Bishop. Ben Morris was heard as Reggie. Eleanor Naylor Corrin was Amanda. Murillo Schofield was Hayes. Fred Wayne played Dr. Gustav. And Daryl McAllister was Banoff. Next Friday night at the same time, we'll bring you another story of the fantastic and the unusual, created by Scott Bishop.
Dark Fantasy, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 2nd, 1942 on NBC. If you were a Chicago radio listener at the time of that episode, you could have tuned in at 11:30 at night and heard 5 minutes of news on WGN, followed by the Lawrence Welk Orchestra, Club Midnight on WUFL, or the Dark Fantasy series on WMAQ. You are listening to an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now John Dixon Carr's series, Cabin B-13, based on one of his short stories. We hear a new work for the radio show called The Sleep of Death in a CBS broadcast from the day after Christmas, 1948.
Cabin B-13. From his notebooks of the strange and sinister, Dr. Fabian brings you tonight's tale of The Sleep of Death.
A circular bedroom, high in a castle tower, hung with rare tapestries, filled with a haunting atmosphere of witchcraft and death. The young American, Ned Whiteford, knew that for 200 years, no person who had slept in that room had lived through the night. Whatever it was that killed left no trace. Would you, like Whiteford, have dared to rest your head there because you were in love?
From Cabin B-13, CBS brings you another great tale of mystery and murder, written by the world-famous best-selling mystery author John Dixon Carr, directed by John Deetz. Now, here's Mr. Carr's famous Dr. Fabian, ship surgeon and world traveler, to tell you tonight's tale, The Sleep of Death.
Ned Whiteford crossed with us to France aboard the Mauravania back in 38. He was looking forward to his new position at the American Embassy. He was young, and even war jittery Paris was a magic land to him. It was on St. Catherine's Day that Ned, unknowingly, made a decision that brought him to the threshold of unspeakable terror and death. And he made it in the midst of the gayest celebration Paris knew, the president's costume ball at the opera. Look at Ned now, wearing the uniform of one of Lafayette's officers. Look closely at the dark-haired young girl in costume, sitting across from him at the little table, half-screened by the palms.
Ned, don't. Please, you mustn't.
Look here, Ileana. We've got to settle this thing. You've enjoyed being here tonight, haven't you?
Oh, Ned, I've loved it. After being hemmed in at my uncle's place in the country, well, it's like heaven.
All right. When I take you back to the hotel tonight, I'm going to face this dragon uncle of yours.
No, no, you mustn't.
I'm going to say that you and I intend to get married, and that's that.
I can't marry you, Ned. I told you that.
But why not? Give me just one good reason.
Because I can't. My uncle would never allow it.
And that seems to you a good enough reason?
Yes.
Uncle of yours. What's his name?
Count Stephen Kohari.
He's a Hungarian, I think you said.
Yes, so am I. My mother was an American.
What's he like, actually?
Well, he's a little eccentric. He... Ned.
What is it?
There he is now.
Your uncle?
Yes, the elegant man in plain evening clothes with the Order of the Golden Fleece across his chest.
I see him. He looks as black as a thundercloud.
Oh, give me my mask, quick. Before he sees us.
No, Ileana.
Why not?
We'd better face this out now. Sit still.
Good evening, Ileana.
Good evening, Uncle Stephen. Uncle, may I present Ned Whiteford?
How do you do, sir?
How do you do? Ileana, do you think that costume is quite the thing to wear in public?
Why not?
An older generation might call it immodest. It looks like...
Like what?
Nothing. You go and get your cloak or your domino, whatever you wore here.
Uncle, please.
Do as I say.
Don't make me go home so soon. It's hardly 11 o'clock.
I was not asking you to go home, my dear. I was merely asking you to put on a wrap.
Oh, all right, I'll get it. You stay and talk to Ned.
I shall be delighted.
Will you sit down, sir?
Thank you. You seem to have had quite a gathering at this table.
Yes, some friends of mine from the embassy there. Upstairs dancing now.
Glasses, glasses, and still more glasses. I was quite an adept once at musical glasses.
Yes?
Have you ever tried it, young man?
No.
You take a spoon, like this, and...
Forgive me, sir. There's something I'd like to ask you.
Yes, young man?
Exactly know how to say this, so I'd better say it in the shortest way. I want to marry your niece. Look out, sir. You've smashed one of the glasses.
Doubtless a few francs will pay for it. There are other things with a higher value, at least for me.
Well, maybe I ought to mention that I'm attached to the American Embassy here. That I have some money of my own and have to support Ileana well.
Indeed.
I only mention that to show, well, that Ileana will be well provided for. The ambassador will vouch for me if you'd like to ring him up.
I ought to mention, I have always kept Ileana carefully guarded from the world.
Almost too carefully guarded, don't you think?
That, young man, depends on my reason.
I'm sorry again.
You have known Ileana how long?
A week.
A week. You would not choose a business partner in a week. Yet you want to marry Ileana a week after you meet her.
We know our own minds, sir.
And you know more than the wisest men of the world. However, as one whose dearest wishes Ileana's happiness...
I hope it is, Count Corey.
You doubt what I say?
Oh, no, sir. Go on.
Well, let me make you a counterproposition. I own a chateau in Touraine, not far from Paris.
I know, Ileana told me.
And here's my suggestion. Why not come down and visit us for a week or two?
Well, that's very decent of you, sir.
Not at all. If at the end of that time you are not cured of this infatuation...
Well, it's not an infatuation. I swear it's not.
If at the end of that time you are not cured permanently of this feeling... You may take Ileana with my blessing. Is that fair?
It's more than fair, Count Corey. I don't know how to thank you.
Don't try. There is just one thing, however.
Yes, sir?
At the Chateau d'Azay, there's a certain bedroom. We call it the tapestry room.
Yes?
I assure you it will be very interesting to sleep in that room.
Why? Is it haunted or anything like that?
Not exactly haunted. And now, if you don't mind, I shall say goodnight. I think I can trust you to bring Ileana safely to the hotel.
Yes.
In the meantime, look there.
What is it now?
Those streams of our fellow guests pouring down the main staircase. Shapes of nightmare. Shapes of delirium. Insane, dead masks where only the eyes move. Mightn't you be terrified, perhaps, if you could look behind those masked gargoyle faces?
No, I don't think so. They're only ordinary people like ourselves.
That's, where you make your mistake. I shall expect you for the weekend. Good night.
Good night.
Ned.
It's all right, Ileana. You can come out from behind the palm.
What was my uncle saying? I couldn't hear.
Ileana, it couldn't be better. He's a very decent old boy, actually. And he's invited me to the Chateau d'Azay.
Did he say anything about the tapestry room?
Yes, he asked me if I'd mind sleeping there.
And you said?
I said I would, naturally.
You mustn't do it, Ned. I won't let you do it.
Why the devil not?
Because everybody who sleeps in that room dies.
Are you serious?
Ned, please don't do it.
Nonsense. A lot of superstitions about every old house.
This isn't a superstition, Ned. It happened once when I was a little girl. A man insisted on sleeping there. They found him dead in the morning.
So? How did he die?
They don't know. There wasn't a mark on his body. He wasn't shot or stabbed or strangled or poisoned or hurt in any way. He was just dead.
Two nights later, in the part of France once called La Touraine, the wind moans down the valley, and rain flickers across the apple trees, and thunder stirs in those haunted hills. It brings small comfort to a young man driven in an ancient carriage from the railway station along snake-like roads and leading to... to what destination? Ahead, a flash of lightning shows the gray walls and conical slate-roofed towers of a chateau set some distance back from the road. Light shines from its narrow windows, dimly seen through the rain.
Driver, coachman.
Yes, monsieur.
Is that the Chateau d'Azay up ahead?
Yes, monsieur. I will take you to the very door if...
If what? Why do you cross yourself?
If I am permitted.
What should stop you?
Only fear, monsieur. I am not much afraid.
What was that?
Only the dogs, monsieur. They keep many dogs, large dogs at the Chateau d'Azay.
Those dogs dangerous? They have to fly at anybody who goes to the front door?
I cannot say, monsieur. But I should advise you to make haste.
Here's your money.
No, thank you. Good night, monsieur. And if one so humble as myself may be permitted a word of advice.
Yes?
Beware of the tapestry room.
Chateau d'Azay.
Thank you, Count Corey.
You must be very wet after your long drive. Go up to the fire and warm yourself.
Thank you.
Madame Play.
Yes, monsieur.
Please tell Antoine to take our guest's luggage up to the tapestry room.
The tapestry room, monsieur?
That is what I said, Madame Play.
Yes, monsieur.
An odd coincidence, Mr. Whitefield. Dr. Solomon and I were just discussing the fate of the last person who slept in the tapestry room.
This is not good, my friend. This is against my advice.
Here, Dr. Solomon croaking.
This is not good, I tell you. It is the wrong season of the moon.
Moon? But there's no moon tonight. It's raining cats and dogs.
Don't talk about dawn. Nevertheless, it is the wrong season of the moon. I say no more.
Cheerful man, that doctor.
Don't do it, Ned. I won't be responsible if they make you do it.
But look here, Count Corey. What did happen to the last fellow who slept in the tapestry room?
You must not call him a fellow, young man. He was a very saintly gentleman. The Bishop of Tours. That was some time ago. Eliana was only 15 years old. But surely she must remember it.
I remember it.
The church said our bishop has no use for superstitions. He insisted on sleeping there. I made him as comfortable as possible. But he was found dead the next morning with a crucifix still in his hand.
Was it poison?
There was no poison, monsieur.
Here, Dr. Solomon.
It's true, Ned.
There were just two curious things in connection with the death, Mr. Whitefoot. On the mantelpiece was found burning a stick of incense. Ordinary incense, nothing wrong with it.
Yes, sir.
And under the dressing table, the police found an empty jar of ointment. Now, come, use your detective wits. A dead man and some burning incense and an empty jar of ointment. What do you make of that?
I don't make anything of it. Is there any reason for this story of death?
Reason?
Any legend attached to the room or something like that?
Yes, there is.
Well, sir?
We are a very old family, my friend. Old and perhaps accursed. When certain of my ancestors moved from Hungary to France in the 17th century, they brought certain beliefs with them. The old religion.
The old religion?
Yes, the cult of Diana. The witch cult, if you prefer.
Now, look here, sir.
Must we talk about this?
Ah, you smile. When I say the word witch, Mr. Whitelaw, you think of some humorous picture on a Halloween card. It was very different in the Middle Ages, believe me. There were many to worship unashamed at the Grand Sabbath, to receive all favors from Satan, their master, to dance forever joyously in the red quadrilles of the netherworld. Some 200 years ago, an ancestress of mine, Catherine Corey, was tortured to death in the tapestry room for professing the old religion. Many persons have not thought it safe to sleep there since. Are you answered?
Come, sir, this is some kind of elaborate joke.
Joke? The Bishop of Tours did not find it a joke.
Not a mark on his body. I assure you, as a physician, not a mark on his body.
You hear, Dr. Solomon?
I hear him.
Understand me, my boy, there's no compulsion in this. If you have not the nerve to sleep in that room...
Who says I haven't got the nerve?
You're weakening. I think I can see it in your face.
Would you like to make a little bet on that?
What sort of bet?
If I spend the night in this famous room and come out of it alive...
Go on.
Will you give your consent to the marriage immediately? Tomorrow morning?
Why tomorrow morning?
Because I don't think the atmosphere of this place is good for Ileana. What do you say? Will you do it?
Very well, my boy. I accept the terms of your wager.
Don't do it, Ned! For the love of heaven, don't do it!
High up in the north tower of the Chateau d'Azay, under the conical slate roof, is the circular room hung with faded tapestries. These tapestries move slightly, with uneasy, mimic life, to the clamor of the storm outside. Candles burn along the mantelpiece, and beside the great four-poster bed. The flames of these candles waver, too, as the door opens.
This is the tapestry room, monsieur.
Thank you, Madame Flay.
That is the mantelpiece where the incense burned. That is the bed where Monsignor the Bishop died.
Very inviting, isn't it?
Will there be anything else that Monsieur requires? Some sandwiches? A decanter of whiskey?
No, thanks. I had a drink with Count Corey before I came upstairs.
Very well, Monsieur. Monsieur's shaving water will be brought up in the morning, if he requires it. Good night.
Infernal old harpy. Trying to scare a fellow out of his wits just because... Well, build a good fire anyway. I didn't realize how cold it was. What's that?
Ileana, may I come in?
No, Ileana, I don't want you exposed to whatever it is.
Ned, listen. Are you going to bed or are you going to sit up all night?
I'm going to sit up all night, naturally.
Then let me sit up with you.
No.
Why not?
First, because it may be dangerous. Second, because I promised your uncle I'd go through this alone.
Oh, I wish you hadn't had that drink with him.
Couldn't have done anything to it. You poured it.
Yes, that's true, only...
Only one of the dogs.
No. Sounded like somebody walking inside the wall of this room. Don't you hear it?
By George, it is somebody walking inside the wall. Get behind that tapestry, Ileana. Quick. Hurry.
All right.
Come, Corey. Where did you come from?
Forgive me, my boy, for seeming to appear out of the wall and between the tapestries. Like Mephisto appearing to Faust. This red dressing gown perhaps adds to the effect.
How did you get here? A passage between the walls?
Exactly. A little device of my ancestors for visiting this room when its occupants are so unmannerly as to bolt the door.
The door is not bolted. You could have walked straight in.
But I could not have done it unobserved.
No, maybe not.
Have you had any other visitors, my boy?
No.
You're sure of that?
Quite sure.
And since nobody saw me come here, I'll just sit down by the fire. Please sit opposite me.
Is this the showdown, sir?
I don't understand you.
There's got to be a showdown between us. Is that why you're here?
I am here, young man, to explain certain things to you. So would you have a cigarette?
I'm
not doped. That's what you're afraid of.
I'll have one. Yes.
Good. Right?
Thank you.
When I was discussing the witch cult a while ago, you did not appear to think I meant what I said.
You want a perfectly frank answer to that?
Yes.
I think you're mad enough to mean anything.
What you say, in a sense, is quite true. In an old and inbred family like ours, the mind can crack, and the fantasies of witchcraft become as real, more real, than the living world. Let me give you an example.
Go on.
The saucer on the table beside you is Ming porcelain. It was once owned by Catherine Corley, a martyr of the old religion. Yet you're using it as an ashtray.
I beg the witch lady's pardon. I'll blow off the ash.
A dangerous remark, sir. Don't you understand that to a sick brain which knows but can't help itself, you have profaned this room merely by entering it? Therefore, you deserve to die.
Like the Bishop of Tours?
Exactly.
You're not going to tell me the devil killed him.
The devil's agent may be flesh and blood.
Then it was murder.
Of course it was murder. Murder so cunningly contrived that no one ever saw through it.
Go on.
I asked you before to use your detective wits on this problem. Incense was burned in this room. Why?
Suppose you tell me.
Obviously, I think to conceal something else which would be too easily noticed.
To conceal what?
The smell of chloroform.
Chloroform?
Yes. A drug not well understood by laymen. Dr. Solomon was using chloroform this afternoon to dispose of some dogs.
So I've heard.
Dr. Solomon is old and forgetful.
You mean chloroform could be stolen?
It could be, easily. Now suppose, just suppose, I take a pad saturated with chloroform. I place it over the mouth and nostrils of a man already sleeping, or drugged, so that he gets no other air.
Wait a minute. That won't do.
Why not?
Chloroform burns and blisters when it touches the skin. You'd leave marks.
Not at all, my friend. Not at all. If I first covered the mouth and nostrils with some substance, like...
ointment.
You're waking up.
I...
Now observe what follows. In a few seconds, unconsciousness. In 2 minutes, 3 minutes...
certain death. Yes.
But chloroform, it evaporates. Delay your post-mortem for 24 hours. It's a very easy matter in these country districts. And no trace remains in the blood. Murder without a mark, my friend. Murder without a mark.
There's just one thing you're forgetting, Count Corey.
What's that?
I'm not sleeping. And I'm not drugged.
Oh, yes. You are?
In the cigarette?
No. In the drink you had with me.
What was it?
Morphine. You've had enough to put 3 men to sleep. That's it. Try to get up.
I'll try. And I'll do it.
You've knocked over the fire iron. You'd have been in the fire yourself if I hadn't caught you.
Take your hands off me.
Just as you please.
If I could reach that bell, pull...
You can't. Let us sit down again.
You murdering lunatic. So that's how you killed the Bishop of Tours. And that's how you're going to kill me.
I? You don't think I killed the Bishop of Tours?
Didn't you?
You young fool. I'm not trying to kill you. I'm trying to save you. Dr. Solomon.
Yes, Monsieur, of course.
Come out from behind that secret door. Come out and be my witness.
Yes, Monsieur. I shall always guard the family honor, even when I guess how men die.
This young man evidently thinks I've been talking about myself. Am I, in the popular parlance, mad?
Oh, heaven forbid, Monsieur. I have never known a saner man.
Have you any notion, Mr. Whitefoot, why I brought you to this house? You would not have believed me if I had merely told you. So I had to bring you here and show you.
Show me?
What? Come out from there, please. Come out!
Iliana!
Why have I kept Iliana so well guarded from the world? Why, the fancy dress ball, did I object to the costume of a medieval witch? Whose dogs were poisoned so that chloroform should be brought? Who poured you the drink drugged with morphine?
In the devil's name! What are you trying to tell me?
Iliana. Yes.
has been hopelessly insane for more than 10 years.
So ends my story, The Sleep of Death, a tale which may give uneasy moments to those of you who may be inclined to fall in love at first sight. Next week, I shall tell you a story that many of you have asked me to tell again. It's the adventure of an easygoing, straightforward New York detective who followed a beautiful murder suspect to Port Said, the crossroads of crime, and who learned that duels are still fought with swords, as well as with 38. And so, next week, when I tell you this tale I call The Dancer from Stamboul, will you join me, Dr. Fabian, here in my cabin B-13?
From cabin B-13, CBS has brought you another strange and sinister tale of mystery and murder, written by the world-famous best-selling author John Dixon Carr and directed by John Deep.
Cabin B-13, on Tuned to Yesterday from December 26th, 1948 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.